Okay, we're now beginning. We're now going to talk about the fourth new architecture, and we're beginning with a discussion of Power PC. Okay, so Benno. Ah, okay, we're going to talk about the... you're going to talk about the Power PC port?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about the Power PC port.
Okay, well, do you want to prefix it with some general discussion of architectures?
Yeah. When you think?
Well, the theory goes according to new architectures, and one of them is PowerPC. That's the introduction. You're going to go ahead and just talk for 5 minutes or something about what the status of the PowerPC works.
Yeah, come around to the phone.
Yeah.
Yell into the phone thing.
Yeah, if you come around over there, actually.
Is the IRC server up, by the way?
They're working on it.
Working on it? Okay.
Alrighty. I don't know how many people noticed the commit that I made actually during the conference.
No.
This was the result of me sitting around the terminal room, not actually seeing any of the sessions, but actually finishing off some work I've been working on, which was replacing the page map code with something that was a bit more sane. The original page map was obtained by taking NetBSD's PowerPC PMap and bludgeoning it with a blunt instrument until it worked. The new version took a slightly more technical approach. I've also now got it up to the point where it is attempting to mount its root file system. I then turned on invariants and it blew up. So I'm now busily debugging a bunch of mutex issues that I'm running into. I'm hoping to get it up to single user, hopefully within a month or so, on the simulator. Then, with some luck, we may get to multi-user before 5.0. It depends on the amount of time I get and whether anyone else jumps in to help. Mark Peake was helping for a while, but I haven't heard from him for a while. I'm not sure what he's up to. So hopefully we'll get somewhere near multi-user for 5.0, possibly on real hardware, as Doug White has given me use of his Blue and White G3, which I can drop a serial port into, which makes it a lot easier to actually work on. That's about it.
Okay. You've addressed the first question, which I guess I was going to ask every architecture port to go in, and that is what will be the condition of the architecture port by 5.0. And
yeah.
We're going to discuss the 5.0 release in detail later, but I should tell you that right now the November timeframe previously pointed out is asserted to be the case.
Yeah.
We don't discuss that now. But if you're saying an experimental multi-user port by 5.0, I mean, it sounds like a reasonable assertion.
I'm pretty sure that we'll definitely be single-user by 5.0. Whether we'll be multi-user depends on a lot of factors, including how many problems I run into in getting there and how much time I have to actually do it.
Okay, so that what that means is that vendors are not going to be expected to ship the PowerPC port in any form because it won't be there.
Correct. It'll be hobbyists only.
Okay.
David.
Everything in CVS at this point,
we
can check out.
The page map updates are in CVS. My current work with the file system is not in there yet. It requires me to it requires me to clean up the Nexus driver that I stole from Spark 64, commit in the open firmware disk driver that I've written, and that will probably happen sometime in the next week or so after I've debugged these invariants.
Did I miss it? What's the actual target hardware we are aiming at here?
Okay. I'm currently writing it on PSIM, which is a PowerPC simulator included in GDB. There's a port for it, which is emulators/PSIM-FreeBSD, which I believe is out of date. I have some updates for it, and I'll give that to a port person as soon as I can.
You should be mailing those to me, then.
Sorry?
You should be mailing those to me.
Okay. Then once that's working, the first hardware that I'll be targeting will be New World Apple hardware. So I have a Revision E iMac and the Blue and White G3 that Doug gave me. That'll be the next two targets, followed probably by my PowerMac 8600, which is an old world beige PowerMac. And I also have a Motorola low-tech board, thanks to Jerry Hicks, which will be the first non-open firmware target. Which will be very interesting.
What are the prospects for using this sort of embedded RPC implementation?
Depends on whether your embedded board has open firmware. If it has open firmware, then there'll be a lot of prospect for it. If it doesn't, then you'll have to wait until I've got the low-pack stuff sorted out and I've factored out the open firmware dependencies.
Okay. Targeting and strong over PowerPC, targeting the embedded world is difficult. You should see the amount of work Wind River goes to, how different every board is. At least in the earlier days when we were trying to drum up inputs for PowerPC and strong arm, the real objective is initially pick a reference platform, get it working on that, and that provides a toolkit, if you will, for the embedded people that then do what they need for whatever target hardware they have. Like I said, for Wind River to do PowerPC, there's 20 plus boards, each one needing different bridges, different bootstraps to make them work. And that gets to be pretty hard to test the level of involvement we have.
What I'm hoping to do is make the low-level guts of the port sufficiently modular that adding new platforms will be as easy as possible. As easy as possible, however, is dependent on how weird the board is.
And also that, given a reference platform, it's definitely easier to compile and target, quite often target very similar CPUs and all for cross-tool units. So that's the other reason, is providing this, if you will, with the reference toolkit for your process.
The other note that I will make is that at the moment I'm only targeting PowerPC CPUs that are similar to the Motorola 600-700 series, not the IBM 400s or the 64-bit PowerPCs, which have significant differences. I think Warner was first.
I was just going to comment that WSD has done very well with having lots of little tiny ports to different boards, and if we do this right, we'll be able to knock those out pretty quickly. So I think focusing on the stuff that Ben is focusing on is probably a good pack. Still, I mean, it's not even a multi-user yet.
I guess my last question on that is just how different are the embedded processors?
Motorola's embedded processors, like the 8200 series, are basically a 603 core with some funky stuff hung on it. IBM's embedded processors, like the 400, are a 32-bit PowerPC, but with the same memory model as the 64-bit. They're sufficiently different that NetBSD actually has two completely different PMAP.Cs. They have an NVC 6XX one and an IBM 4XX one.
I want to emphasize David's point, having spent 5 years at Wind. Every board is different, and almost every rev of every chip is different, to the point where device drivers you expect to work, like Ethernet device drivers, don't. So it's really, really ugly. But, you know, there are ways to handle it. Wind River is trying to come up with a unified model for all their boards, but it's like everything, every rev that comes out is really different.
Okay, so we should probably... you want to make a final comment?
Going.
Yeah, do you want to make a comment?
Just a couple. One, whether or not you've had any support from Apple or any of the hardware vendors who might be interested in seeing previous people.
I have had some help from Apple, mostly in terms of support code for their stuff. I've had some people help me out by pointing me at which bits of Darwin I should look at and other various things. Also, Dave Sarzicki has been promising for some time now and has told me to start hitting him to give me some assembly routines for various simple like libc functions and stuff like that, which will help out later on. In terms of hardware support, I've had none. The closest I've got was Jerry Hicks, very graciously bought me the Motorola low-tech board.
Okay, well, I think it's probably about time to move on to the next platform. We have a number of platforms on the list, and I guess unfortunately, neither Doug Rapson nor Peter Wem is currently here, and so we're probably going to go ahead and skip IA64, and in the event that Peter turns up later in the day, we can discuss that platform. Unless,
well,
John, do you want to say anything? Or?
I'll say a few words on that.
You want to say anything? Okay.
It's kind of hosed at the moment due to tool chain issues. Major ABI changes happen with the compiler and the lib. It's to the point that it's going to take significant effort, not like writing a whole new course, but significant effort to bootstrap it again up to the more current level. Peter's very anxious to get working with that for BSDCon, and he's poking me to help him with what he needs and vice versa.
Okay.
So hopefully we might, those of us that saw it running multi user once before 6 months ago, we might be there again in a month.
Okay. So in that case, we'll move on to the next platform on the list, which is the x86-64, I guess they're called Hammer. I don't remember. Anyway, David, you're I'm afraid the stucky for that one again. Actually, David, maybe I could get you to come over here since you're going to get to say things on each of these with tool chain.
Oh, let's see where we're at. We have a tool chain now that will target it that's mostly in our tree. It's going to be about another week, and I should be able to build a world and run. There's a simulator issue. AMD. I need a new simulator from AMD. After their budget cuts and everything from 6 months ago, they're not too responsive. But I think I have a way around that. Hardware's not available yet, so we're not in a huge rush. We can take our time and kind of do good on my model.
Okay, I guess we take questions on that.
I'm hearing a lot of background noise. I think my phone's still here.
Yeah, how's the quality on the phone for people who are over there?
It's okay. I'm hearing a little bit of background. It's a little bit garbled in the background.
Okay, are you getting the questions okay?
Yeah, somewhat. The people who are further away from I guess, the receiver, I can hear them somewhat faintly.
Okay, so I guess much of that is everyone who is asking questions should speak up.
Or come and be by the
or
phone.
Or come and be the by the phone.
Okay,
are there any questions regarding the AMD 64 stuff?
During the NetBSD talk, there was some talk about PAE coming for free. Is that really true, and will it affect our x86 port?
It sounds like we have some debate. I think I agree with them within reason. Peter has already been adding PAE to our existing PMAP, so that'll be where we're going to really start adding this from. So
then is Peter actually looking at this N-level PMAP that...
Mark Van Leeuwen.
Yeah, Frank Van Leeuwen did.
I don't know if Peter is actually looking at making a more generic M-level PMAP. I know that the main reason for doing PAE for the i36 PMAP is specifically so that we can use that PMAP in the x86-64 port. I know it's a stepping stone to help with the x86-64 stuff.
And he needs it too for yarn.
Yeah.
Don't we need to? Part of the PAE support is also having all the network drivers use bus DMA.
There are lots of bus DMA issues.
Spark 64 needs that too.
It's not necessarily as bad as Frank made it out during his talk, because most of the cards you're talking about at least understand dual address cycles, so you don't have to have bounce buffers.
Okay, are we done with the discussion of the AMD64?
I think so.
Just a question that didn't get asked on the last one as well is, what's the sort of expected status for 5.0?
We might run in a simulator that most people can't afford.
Sounds like a good answer from the vendor perspective too. And I assume IA64 would be identical to AMD64 in that sense, because there isn't much hardware.
Well, hardware is semi becoming available. I mean, I think we as a project should probably put an ISO up. I don't think vendors are going to make any money selling stuff.
Okay. We'll take that as input to the release engineering process.
And first, may come up later, the ACPI sometimes broken, sometimes works. We know this performance of IA64. AMD, I have heard nothing of what their hardware is going to look like. It would not surprise me if it's not required there also.
Okay. Let's go ahead then and move on to the Spark 64 port, which Jake will talk about. And no doubt, David will have things to say too.
By the way, Robin, I just spoke to Peter Webb on the phone.
That's great. That's great.
I didn't return my phone call.
The basic status of the port is we boot multi-user on real hardware.
hardware.
Yeah, it's pretty stable. It's decent. We're looking at targeting Ultra 2s in some configuration, Ultra 5s, Ultra 10, Ultra 60, and Blade 100. There'll be something for 5.0, but I don't know what the installation procedure will be. I don't know if sysinstall will work, so it may be a pretty manual procedure. I don't know if libdisk will work.
I'm working on that.
Yeah, John. As far as the tool chain goes, David's been doing a lot of work lately. We have a native tool chain, but we haven't tested it much. I built Vim and Espen natively. David's built kernel.
I wouldn't say it's a native tool chain. We have a hosted tool chain.
Yeah.
Difference being it runs on Spark 64, generates Spark 64 binaries. It is not our usual user bin, user libexecdel with all of our mods in it, just a little bit. It does build working kernels, working libs, working binaries. It's GCC 3.1 and Vim Utils 2.12, so we're up to, we're the first ones to kind of move to that.
Are there any questions?
So what is the bootstrapping procedure? You boot disklessly and then you format a disk?
Load the kernel over TFTP or NFS, and then mount root from NFS. And then from there, use NewFS and Dislabel to get a system untarred on a disk, and then mount root from that.
Okay, so first in law school.
How's the bootloader?
The bootloader works. Booting from disks at TFTP is not really there yet, but it's not that hard. There'll be a few more days hacking to get it to work. CD-ROM booting from ISO is probably pretty easy.
How compatible are the disk formats with Solaris?
We can mount Solaris disks.
And
NetBSD. I think using a FreeBSD disk label is slightly better, but the other ones work.
How likely do you think that all of World will be self? I mean, can we assume it will be self-hosting by the time we get to Fiverr? Perl and all that stuff.
We're going to cut that out of the equation.
Right now we're having a problem bootstrapping Perl, which we need to build the kernel, which is a bit of a pain in the ass.
Yeah, we will after the weekend.
Yeah.
But I think what that does lead to is this, where you're getting is there's polishing to be done, and the system is literally to the point that, you know, if you're not a kernel hacker, you don't have, you know, 4 hours every night, but you got a little bit on the weekend. If you have access to a Spark 64 box, you mentioned any of those, there's really general polishing to be done in user land, and then these nits and those nits are really to the point that it's ready for more people to jump in.
Finding NEM problems in ports and finding NEM problems in the base system. Right now we're performance tuning the kernel.
But it's stable. I have not gotten any panic.
Okay.
Terry?
If somebody wanted to use that for a 32-bit port, how far off is
it? It's completely different. We depend on a lot of the features. We depend on a lot of the features in UltraSpark specifically that are not in the Spark V9 spec. You'd need to rewrite the kernel.
Do you document those features? Where you depend upon them?
It's all the memory. It's all the mutex and minbar and all that stuff.
The PMAP is most of it. We depend on nucleus context, which helps a lot in a lot of situations.
I'm not asking to be a pain. It's just there's a lot of IPC and similar hardware available out there to help flesh out the problems that you're getting with the NDM and so forth.
Spark U2s and U1s are cheap enough now.
I don't see the point in supporting Spark 32 at all. It's not really the FreeBSD charter, and
just look. I'll give you, if I gave you a 386, would you help fix problems in the x86 port we have? I gave you a 33 megahertz 386, would you fix bugs? That would be the equivalent
of... Because they're a big bug.
Most of my SMP work is done on a dual P90 with 16 megagrams.
Oh, that's different. It's not a speed thing. It's a support thing. Because
it's a speed thing also.
But
like,
yeah, we don't do atomic instructions
machine,
on 360.
But I'm the wrong guy to ask on the speed thing, because I think most programmers should have to program on 386.
We're in five-fifth territory now.
Are there any more questions?
Okay.
This may be the same question in a different form, but are there any older UltraSpark machines that have SBUF that might need SBUF support? Or
UltraTwos. Yeah, we have SBUF support, but you need an HME network card. The LNC network card in it, the driver is not bus DMAified, so we don't know if it'll work. And the FAST Desi controller, I don't know about that. NetBSD has
it. I'll help you out.
Yeah,
great. That's a problem there.
The U1s would probably be work fine if you had an HME card to drop in it.
Yes.
There's no reason to suggest that it wouldn't. So any of the lower end are there.
The bus support is there, we just need the device support. Ben?
Have you got the Gen 8-bit driver going at all?
Yeah, according to EMM, it works really well. And hopefully you can use that directly.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Context is that the GMAC Ethernet chip found a lot of Apple hardware is actually the some Gem chip by any other name.
Okay, I'm going to go to the phone. Are there any questions out on the phone regarding this Fox 64 port or earlier ports that we discussed? Take that as a no. Okay, so we're done with the Fox 64. Yeah.
There is an IRC server now, by the way.
What's the channel?
I'm
on BSD comms. Last time I looked, Jay Lemon.
It's called IRC, the machine.
Okay.
Is it BSD code works.
IRC.
Yeah. Okay. So we did in the Usenix meeting in the summer have a slot for ARM related ports. As far as I know, nobody is doing anything, and therefore, unless somebody is standing up. You want to say something? Say something.
On strong arm, we can get to the point of printing out copyright messages and kind of some of the earlier things that you do in a kernel. This was pre-KSD. This is a bunch of code written off to the side, so it doesn't really smell like FreeBSD. Someone needs to put some time and kind of pee on it and make it smell right, make it our territory, update it to KSD. So the question is, and I have stuff I want to work on getting committed real soon now, is what path we want to take on this, considering the various issues. Check in what we have now, make it work later, wait for something that actually works, to some degree, yada, yada, yada. Open for input.
Who's been working on it?
I can't pronounce the name properly. Up in Canada.
Stefan. Yeah, I suppose.
I don't know what's left. If he didn't have a .ca on the end, I would think he was somewhere way out in Europe somewhere.
Strange far reaches of Europe.
Why not just use proportion? Just stick something and just let it go from there, and then whoever really wants to have it, let Peter.
Probably part of his development methodology talk.
Right?
Well, for one, I have some my own opinions of doing everything in proportion. The other is person is rather disconnected and likes doing it that way. And regardless, supposing I did just throw in P4 today, that still doesn't get to the real questions of the direction we want to take on the support of do we really want it to smell like FreeBSD and look like everything else? Because we've kind of got three fields. We our x86 and our alpha feel very different when you go looking through code and various things. The i64 feels like the alpha done by the same person. Jake's kind of, this may go to another thing, so I track it up, kind of feels different. So what requirements do we want to have for bringing in new port? And I was hoping to get some direction by the end of the day for another discussion.
Yeah, I think that's another discussion. I would also like to see a consistent directory layout for the machine-dependent code, but that's its own little bug shed that you may have to discuss later.
The question I was going to ask you is, I mean, is the person who's doing this work willing to go the rest of the way towards maintaining and running this port?
You never know. It would be slow. If you start to run on some hardware, you get a lot more people's attention. The basic idea, the reference for this is the iPad, because it shows that it kind of makes you think in that kind of more embedded, I don't have necessarily the keyboard, I don't have all the rest of the stuff. And again, at least those of us that are interested in other ports, especially in the embedded world, is let's provide just something of reference to see where it is.
So I guess we should briefly take questions, and then we should probably move on to discussion of the tool chain, which we should keep standing there. No idea.
Last year we also had status on the MIPS port, and it hasn't changed.
Yes, it actually did.
Yeah, I know.
I yanked out the tool chain.
It went backwards.
That's not entirely true. Certain people who use FreeBSD on MIPS have a port, and they're trying to decide whether or not to contribute it to FreeBSD. It's a stable-ish vintage, but
what platform?
I don't know. This is what I know. And I'm trying to get this to see how far away it would be to make a current port, but they need to sanitize it first, but they don't want to sanitize it if it's not going to go in. So kind of a chicken and an egg problem right now. So if there's interest, contact me. If there's not, I'll just kind of let it die quietly.
Any comments on that one?
Would you say that it's an interesting embedding platform, definitely. So if we decide that's part of our charter.
Well, yeah. It depends on exactly what it is. If it's someone doing it on a deck station 5000 with all of its weirdness,
this is
it's not the
This is on current MIPS technology for a particular router vendor that's shipping stuff. So it's not some weird deck station.
I mean, which is exactly the reason why it's kind of interesting for us to support.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so my opinion on my general opinion on hardware ports is that, you know, it's the same question I asked about the support for ARM is, you know, obviously it requires a lot of effort to maintain a port. We're already grossly increasing the amount of effort it's going to take to retain a number of things by adding new additional hardware ports. If port for it is a reality from the people who did the port, whoever they might be, you know, that makes it much more likely to be acceptable. But I suspect that perhaps we should take this general question to another forum. And
okay, I just wanted to mention that has
lots of eyebrows went up, so I think that's a good sign.
Okay. I'll pursue it a little bit more.
Okay, so we have a time slot in here for discussion of the tool chain relating to different hardware ports. And I just saw David sit down.
The question is whether we should expand that slot just a little bit to talk about multi-architecture issues.
Yeah, we have a 20-minute window at the end, which is for discussion of the things we haven't talked about.
Well, it may have been about a 10-minute window at the end.
But yeah. Well, why don't can we hold that off until we discuss the tool chain? Where the tool chain lead into that discussion? David, do you have anything to say about tool chains and multiple architectures?
It's a quagmire. What do you want to know? Let me just take questions.
What are the plans for the tool chain for project?
The general plan, of course, is UGC 3.1, then util 2.12.2, or we got one at that point. My level of commitment, my interest is importing a new architecture. Guess what? I don't need C++ for that. I can read man pages on a different box. It's the only thing in our tree that needs C++ to build. So I'm not necessarily giving the level of commitment of making it work as I have in the past. People that are interested, raise your hand.
That sounded like I'm raising a hand for something else, too. Interesting.
You know my email. Send me a disk. but, of course, like you say, we need GCC 3.1 and newer venue tools for the port we're headed to. My level of commitment to it, at least, will stay. It takes to get kernels built and usable parts. Interesting parts of usable parts. I am not the maintainer of these bits anymore, however. There, very soon, will be something that those that want to play with it may download some patches so that you can build it on your own system. And not have C++ or not. It's debatable who's going to clean this up for 5.0, and that's maybe an issue.
Especially for the new hardware ports. So.
Well, again,
yeah.
I'll be the C compiler.
Okay, but so, I mean, we'll discuss release engineering in detail later, but it seems to me that we'll have two statuses of hardware ports. We'll have highly likely to be vendor-supported hardware platforms, which will be the complete system, and then there'll be the other ones, which will be, you know, cut them to yourself to a large extent. I think the project has to have this notion of supported, and supported is the ones which will have the full tool chain, which means somebody will need to do the work, you know, and that means we find somebody one way or the other.
Any other questions?
Venue tools, question. Someone posted recently ports, Apaches to allow proper treating of threads in the current thread library. Was that for the previous tool chain or the upcoming tool chain?
Is this something that happened this week? I don't know exactly.
Week, I mean.
Give me a little more context. This is the first time I ever got a mail this
patches
week.
To allow GCC to
GDB.
GDB, rather.
Okay, those, I'm trying to get them out of, I'm not willing to go dig bits and bits and websites and this, and finally figure out the patch to go put in our code to make it work. I keep telling the guy, give me a patch that does something reasonable, because he also says he wants to be our GDB maintainer. The other thing is I'm waiting on paperwork for him, from him to hit the FSF, and then I can actually go commit it in the GDB tree where I have privileges to do that for our needs. So the holdup is, one, I'm looking for something I can actually use out of him because I'm not going to spend 10 hours to get the usable bit in a form I can use, and two, I'm waiting for paperwork so it becomes a non-issue because we can commit stuff into GDB.
I have a related question to KSE,
okay.
Which is I'm going to need help at some stage to read up GDB. I assume that this guy's going to have to end up talking to you.
For some of the things I think that you're going to want to do is probably talking to John and DFR and yourself and Doug Eisen, because I thought there was a discussion already that might happen on the mailing list a little bit of you. Talking with Dan Eichen about some changes that were needed. I thought. I just think there's a lot of people that the things are changing. No one person's really totally on top of everything, and the fact that you're looking for someone else, that just kind of shows we each know a little piece of that.
That's generally the problem, you know, we each know a little bit of something. there's usually parts of the system that our expertise doesn't extend to, and it's like, we say, well, I know what I need to do, but if I do it, what else am I going to break?
And, yeah, I have no fancy answer for him.
That's when you ask.
You break it, and someone will figure it out. You know. In this case, we need KSAs, you just kind of break it, and we'll try to pick up the piece, I don't know.
Yeah, we should probably move on from that.
I'm just curious, because I haven't paid all that much attention, how much hacking takes place with GCC when it gets dropped into FreeBSD? Is it a gigantic set of patches that get applied before it's imported, or is it pretty much stock?
There are a lot of patches, especially to support our dual AOUT ELF format. At this point, we could probably drop the AOUT to go much more stock. The B-making, however, their build procedure has looks nothing like ours. And the number of people developing on GCC has immensely grown as we have all these people wanting their favorite thing done and changed and tweaked. The B-making is not trivial at this time, in the least.
Okay. So maybe we should go ahead and move on. We, in theory, now have a 20-minute gap, which is for general discussion of architectural issues. I see Paul Henning already had one question regarding, I guess, general policies for different architectures, and we had also a question about organizing the tree in a useful way. I guess what we could do is just have a semi-open discussion where people raise their hands and I wave at them, and then they get to say something, as opposed to the other model. If somebody wants to begin, I'd have to. Well, Henning, you want to go?
I have three issues regarding multi-architecture, which I'll be facing as part of the DARPA-sponsored work here. One of them is NDNS in the undisk file system. To what degree do we want to be able to pull a disk out of a FreeBSD Spark 64 and plug it into a FreeBSD 386 machine and actually mount the file system? And on a related note, I will be needing help from the people in the various architecture ports to collect the various disk label formats for the native the local native disk label format, for instance, for Spark 64 is probably the sub disk label I mentioned. And we need to add code for that to Yarn so that we get a generic ability to understand these disk label formats. And my final point was, what do we do about the you broke world on the FUBAR architecture? Do we get an array of the beef like machines? Or what's the plan?
We want.
Well,
I'll address the last question first, which is we do need either a beast-like collection of machines, or we need to beef up our current cross-building capability. We can cross-build world, but we can't then cross-build LS.
with those tools. If I want to hack a change to LS, I can't just build LS. So I think we have either can throw a lot of hardware at it, or we can throw a lot of David at it. I know which one David would prefer.
To do the second, not even NetBSD, who has wanted to get out of building back releases on a back.
You can build a batch of
right, but it's the whole thing we have is that whole complete release. I don't know if anyone is setting up that wants to or even has plans to set up a build environment you can make one little change to avoid a make world.
NetBSD has done some stuff in that area. I'm breaking the rules. I'm sorry. NetBSD has done some stuff in that area very recently. So you can cross build on weird platforms.
No.
Fast platform. And still incrementally develop on this fast platform.
Okay, so I'm going to break in just for a moment. I'm going to suggest earlier I mentioned the notion of a supported release from the release engineering process, and it's also conceivable to have the same notion here in the cross-platform build during development where some releases are supported and some are not. And in the event that hardware, I would suggest that if a particular architecture is going to be highly supported by the FreeBSD project, there must be a build cluster available for it, whatever that means.
Well,
David, go ahead.
I already have a strong arm. I have a shark that can go down if we get that Taurus arm. I've been working on getting us an Ultra 5 that will go in the cluster like within the month. I think we can assume we'll have a reference box in the cluster for every piece of hardware. I'm getting people to use it. They don't use these, so some degree is limited how much they can use putting down there. RPC, I'm sure Jordan keeps making noise. Somehow you can get one in the cluster when we get far enough. I think enough of them will drive down to his office and we can make good on that. I don't see hardware as an issue.
On the subject of RPC, once I'm up to a certain point, I'd be willing to let go of one or two of my machines that can be put into the cluster if need be. Or else I can host them somewhere in Australia and make sure to fill in and fill until we get something else in.
So that's the beginning discussion of the breakage issue. I think there's probably a lot more discussion. No, sorry, Nick.
Well, on the concept of wall breakage and things like that, the NetBSD team was talking about having a tinderbox environment. So after every commit, you can build world on obviously different architectures and see what breaks. And in terms of having builds of clusters, maybe it's worth talking with them about being able to share hardware. If we've got more hardware on one platform than they need, and they've got hardware that we're talking to.
Cool, Henning.
On the subject of Tinderbox, about 2 years ago, I set up one of my machines to basically do a make world and record if anything were broken in the meantime and if there was any new warnings from the kernel. And I think I managed to send out 3 emails before I was told that, we don't want to be banned by this. In particular, I think Jordan was active in that discussion.
We'll just replace it with David's email address in the from, and then everything.
Then we're a developer.
My question is, if we want to do something like a Tinderbox-like system, it will probably require some kind of buy-in, either by the loose group of heavy-duty committers saying, "Well, suffer it, guys, and don't commit errors," or by a core edict.
I think the Mozilla team do it predominantly more with a web page status rather than emailing out.
That's going to work. GCC and the GCC group does a Tinderbox thing, and when there's a change in, well, errors, I don't know if we want to do it in warning, but when there's a build error, it knows who committed because this information is available to you since the last good run. And everyone that lists gets email and it's just accepted, and I would like to see us move towards that. Or I don't see why Core can't say that we need it for quality assurance. And if you break it, you're getting. But it has to be emailed because I'm not going to go to a website and bother looking. The other thing is, as an action item, these are really good ideas that you don't need a developer for, but all those sysadmins say they really want to contribute to the FreeBSD effort and have a lot more curl glue than I do that helps to run some of this. As an action item, if you really like to tag one of these guys that's got some skills that can really assist.
One of your things.
Okay, from my standpoint, if I could cross-build Spark 64,
that would go a long way to finding this stuff. Not only is it 64-bit, but it's also the wrong engine. So,
wrong.
It is part of the plan. I mean, yeah, our tree works pretty good for cross-billing. It's just getting... But even if it was only one port that you supported fully to do that, I think that would go a long way to getting x86 people to actually check the tree.
Well, you have Alpha right now that will do it.
It's not India Switch, though. And just the same thing that Warner was saying about being able to do incremental builds, even if it was only on one platform.
So we should probably round up this discussion. The one comment I was going to make is that if, as a project, we're going to commit to having many platforms, this must be addressed, because the current scheme will not scale, doesn't even really scale into two platforms with things just break. When we get to N platforms, you know, there has to be...
Three platforms now.
1598. Okay. I was counted that as part of IED6.
Two and a half.
We have N platforms, small N. Yeah. If it becomes big, there'll be a problem. I guess we'll do a quick another round. Nick has a...
Just related to the question of wall breakage and so on, is also issues of regression testing. You don't break the build, but you break some functionality that ended up. Issues of regression testing, not just with compile files or whatever, but functionality.
It's just one engineering stuff.
No, it is not. It's not just a release time thing. Mm-hmm.
I don't know what can be done with that. If you don't have the hardware, it's hard to run it. I would think that if we don't have enough people using that platform, that they'll at least catch that level of it.
It has to have some stuff.
Yeah, that's the hardware. Okay, let me go to Greg now.
I'm not sure. Have we finished this discussion? Because I wanted to get back to another point that Paul Henning made.
Let's hold off just for a moment, see if there's one more comment on that, and then we'll lead back to this, including the file system issue.
This is a purely organizational question. What does it take for this project to decide to do significant support for a platform or whatever the term Robert would use?
A flame war.
Is this a kind of discussion that happens with developers? Is this the kind of thing we do based on whether there's hardware in the build swap? Or is this something the release engineers decide?
I think that's an excellent question. I think that would probably be a good discussion for the mailing list. But I agree
put
that
it on the action list.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.